Blog Talk Radio.
And greetings and blessings, blessed souls. We're alive because we're blessed to stay alive in Torah Chaim, instructions of life, Torah Chesed, instructions of kindness, Torah Rachamim, instructions of mercies. You're tuning to blogtalkradio.com, and we humbly suggest we're the higher inner frequency. We call ourselves Soul Class. This is Soul Class 621, Secular by Design Program, presentation number 70. Blessed is our Creator, Shalom, peace, and bracha, blessing upon the human, and I mean the entire human family experience. With Creator's help, we're now broadcasting live at 9:31 a.m. live from Turtle Island, a.k.a. the USA, Unified Soul Actualization. Program content we'll focus on reading from Alan W. Cecil's Secular by Design, a philosophy of no-eyed laws and observances, which you can purchase by going online to any search engine. Again, that's Secular by Design, a philosophy of law, no-eyed laws and observances. Our call number is 347-838-8669. Meanwhile, may the Eternal Creator bless and protect you and your loved ones. The tags for today's program are... Eternal Creator, Divine Image, Universal Redemption, Children of Israel, collaborating with the children of Noah, to remove hatred, jealousy, and competition, which is not needed. And you're listening to our segue opening music, the Maccabees, from their One Day More Destination CD, and that was called Achenu, Our Brother. Joining me live right now is... author, Alan W. Cecil, the writer of Secular by Design, a philosophy of Noahide Laws and Observances, and also another book I heavily recommend for anyone. It's called The Noahide Code, A Guide to the Perplexed Christian. Also joining me today is Rambam student, teacher, and disseminator and advocate for the dispersion of the teachings of the great Nesher, the Nesher Gadol, the great eagle, Rambam Maimonides, Rabbi Moshe Ben Maimon, Dennis Ryan. Before I turn to my co-host, I just want to mention that today's program is dedicated towards the ascension of the soul of my dear father, Reb Shlomo Yaakov, Olav Shalom, upon him peace, who passed on April 17, 2016, which corresponds to the Hebrew lunar calendar date of the 9th of Nisan, 5,776 years since the onset of the human stewardship plan by the Creator, Adam and Eve. Good morning, Dennis and Alan. Alan and Dennis.
Good morning.
Boker Tov, everybody.
Okay, I'd like to start with gentlemen, and again, we're sharing a program in a more condensed version, but hopefully our words will mean more, even in spoken in terse fashion. Gentlemen, and blessed souls listening out there, these are kind of murky waters theologically for me, because it might seem that I, as a Torah observant Jew, am going to be reading things that might, because it's not really connected to my faith or my belief system, is an attack. It's not an attack. It's rather Alan's efforts to show how Western philosophies are seeping and brimming with ideologies which are against the Torah. In that context, I want to state it. Now, one of the things that Alan, we're going to be reading about today is the Gnostic focus on salvation. Now, I have to mention to you, blessed souls, that I was reviewing Rambam's 13 Principles of Faith last night and this morning, and one of the 13 Principles of Faith is not, in fact, our belief in personal salvation. We do have a blessing in our liturgy where we bless the Creator, who we give a tribute to him as the with the following attributes. And who can be compared to you, King, who brings death and restores life and causes deliverance to spring forth? Blessed are, or I should say, and you are trustworthy to revive the dead, Blessed are you, Lord, who revives the dead, which has happened historically and soon will happen, hopefully, in with the prophetic prophecies, with the prophecies coming to fulfillment. So the idea of salvation from a Jewish Torah perspective is one of, number one, connecting to being brought back to life. It's also connected to a national physical redemption from the conditions of slavery, whether it be back in the days of Egypt, when we were enslaved we were conquered by the Babylonians and the Persians, the Medians and the Greeks, and for the last almost 2,000 years by the ancient Roman kingdom. So with that, I want to put in that context, and then I want to bring on Dennis and Alan before we start reading from Alan's book, any thoughts they might have on these matters. Dennis?
Yeah, well, redemption is different in different religions because for Catholicism, the whole idea is what happened after the death of Jesus of Nazareth. That was the most important thing. Not while he was here, because he didn't change anything. But his death did have an impact, but that goes to faith and belief that you cannot prove, you cannot substantiate, but you believe in it as a matter of belief. So when that happens, it's more mental than it is anything else. So it may be a little hard to understand, but I'll try my best.
Okay. And I want to apologize to you gentlemen, anyone listening out to the live version. They're doing some drilling outside my house. If you hear a rat-a-tat-tat, no, they're not shooting at us. They're taking down part of our porch. They're building a school underneath my house. Alan, before we start reading from your book, any thoughts on these matters that have just been discussed so tersely?
Well, one of the things I want to point out is there are major differences in the Noahide law, which is based on the Torah, and Jewish law. One of these is there is not a commandment for Noahides to believe in God. So it should be a good thing, but it's just not something that is not prohibited. Atheism is not a prohibition per se, as long as you keep the Noahide law. In that sense, the concept of beliefs, salvation.
Excuse me, Alan. You, from my side, you sound very, very like you've just gone, immersed yourself into a pool of water. Can you try again?
Oh. Is this any better?
Much better. I think you took your head out of the telephone wire water.
There we go. Now, I was just saying that there's a major difference in Noahide law as far as belief goes. And the Noahide law prohibits, the prohibition of idolatry is prohibiting any Noahide worshiping any god but Hashem. That being said, there is no positive commandment to believe in God, which means an atheist can act, as long as he keeps the Noahide laws, can be considered an observant Noahide. Maybe not a righteous one, but an observant one. And the issue of salvation and belief is not a necessary component to the Noahide law.
Mm-hmm. That being said, we're going to now turn to page 138 in the section of Secular by Design, A Philosophy of Noahide Laws and Observances, written by Alan W. Cecil. And this section, particular section, is called Protocols of the Theologian. It goes like this. The Gnostics' focus on salvation cannot be overemphasized. This was a main concern of Gnosticism. The spiritual salvation of the individual, the release of the soul from its earthly, fleshly, material body. Yet Gnosticism remains one of the least understood and least studied areas of Christianity. One would think that the pursuit of the origins of Christianity, a religion which evolved out of a morass of Gnostic faith, would have had a detailed and exhaustive theological and academic treatment of Gnosticism. One of the problems has been a dearth of Gnostic material. When the Gnostic Catholic Church seized power, it systematically destroyed all of the early Gnostic writings it could get its hands on, and only a few scraps of Gnostic texts survived the purges of the Church. Most of our knowledge of Gnosticism comes from the writings by the early Church Fathers, and these were decidedly one-sided. The situation changed drastically in 1945 when a library of Gnostic writings, including some books that had been mentioned by a second century church fathers and previously thought lost forever, were found in Nag Hammadi, Egypt. It has been over 60 years since the Nag Hammadi library was discovered, and over 30 since the last of the Nag Hammadi books have been translated into English, and yet relatively few books on Gnosticism have been written. It is as if the church had feared to peer too closely into its beginnings, particularly with a religion that was reviled by the early church fathers, not because it was so different from quote-unquote Orthodox Christianity, because it was so familiar. The few scholars who saw the Gnostic influence in the New Testament were largely ignored by the mainstream theologians. And there's a footnote 14 back on page 138 I want to read. And here Alan is quoting from Rudolf Bultmann's Theology of the New Testament, printed by Charles Scribner's Sons of New York in 1951. I think it's page 55 and also page 175. It goes like this. Most of all, the Gnostic stock of concepts served to clarify the history of salvation. According to these concepts that Redeemer appeared as a cosmic figure, the pre-existent divine being, Son of the Father, who came down from heaven and assumed human form, and who after his activity on earth was exalted to heavenly glory and rested sovereignty over the spirit powers to himself. It is this conception of him that he is praised in the pre-Pauline Christ hymn, which is quoted in F-H-I-L, I don't know how you...
Philippians.
Philippians, okay. Chapter 2, verses 6 to 11. This mythos is also briefly noted in Corinthians 2, chapter 8, verse 9. The Gnostic idea that Christ's early garment of flesh was the disguise in consequence of which world rulers failed to recognize him. For if they had recognized him, they would not have brought about their own defeat by causing his crucifixion, lurks behind. And that's in quoting from Corinthians 1, chapter 2, verse 8. Now, I have to admit, gentlemen, I am at a loss for this material because I don't study those sections or in general of the New Testament. So, I don't know, maybe, Dennis, you can fill me in. This is very foreign material to me. If you want to expound, maybe you can clarify some things. And, of course, Alan, then for your feedback.
So who goes first, Don?
You, Alan. You, Dennis. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, you called it murky waters. I call it a lot of disconcerting ideas. What happens is these are people who want to explain the mysteries of Christianity. Let's put it that way. They don't have all of the facts, but they have a lot of good intentions. And since it wasn't tightly organized, everybody could come out with their own opinion as long as the one thing that Christianity is God-based. Whether it's Noahide laws or not, Christianity is God-based. God is paramount to Christianity. So when you have humans running around the planet writing up things or even doing oral history of what they believe happened and describing mysteries here and there, you have mass confusion. And this was a hard thing to put to bed. And what Alan said is partially true. I'm not saying he said anything bad there, but it's partially true because part of it, he's doing what historians do, and that is give his interpretation of what happened. So he mentions a lot of facts, and then he comes back with his interpretation. I'm not saying it's a bad interpretation, but yes, they tried to hide everything that was put together called Gnostic thinking, Gnostic ideas. But they still are hanging around today. And this has been a disturbing thing because Christianity was trying to get organized under one organization. So we have many individuals who, over the years, started their own thing. Matter of fact, a famous thing at the Council of Nicaea, this is a fact, and that is they asked for everybody to come out with a new version of the Old Testament called the New Testament. Well, there was about 15 different versions.
Mm-hmm.
They picked up 4 out of the 15 because a lot of the stuff was laughable. It didn't have anything related to actual facts. It had people thinking about stuff that was off the wall. So, but they needed something to start unification of these ideas. So, a lot of those gospels, so-called written gospels, were discarded, were, from a historical viewpoint, somewhat of a joke, even though they were written by holy men who thought they were doing the right thing. So the best that came out of the New Testament is based on four authors. And the four authors, it's a little shaky for some of them because they got very close to the truth, but they decided to throw in a little schmaltz, okay? So, when you start doing that, it's hard to find out where is the true clear water in the murky water. But if you start mixing the waters, you cannot take out the part you didn't want to be there in the first place. So that's what we're left with today, was these people all had different ideas, but thinking that they were all part of Christianity, that whatever they said was had meaning. So due to the fact that it wasn't strictly organized because it was basically oral history. And that's one of the reasons why, what, the Muslims said no more oral history after a certain time, because they were thinking that you get too many ideas and it's uncontrollable. And if you're having a religious organization, you cannot have uncontrollable ideas all over the place. So the mysteries are, based on Christianity, what happened after Jesus of Nazareth died. And that's the whole idea of Christianity, of salvation. It happened after he died. So you may say, well, what does his death have to do with it? Because that was declared by the people who were running Christianity at the time, is what they believed in. So we still have that belief today. So the Gnostic stuff never came to light because it was never exposed. It was basically pushed back and said, let's not go there. So in that case, Alan is correct.
Alan, your take on these matters?
Well, Rudolf Bultmann was one of the most respected and well-known theologians of the mid-20th century, and he pointed out the many Gnostic ideas and concepts, especially in the Gospel of John and in Paul's writings. The point I'm making in the book is that these ideas and concepts, Christianity came from Gnosticism. Gnosticism was Christianity. There was, in the early centuries, the second, third centuries, there all of the churches, all of the groups were Gnostic religions. The modern religion of Christianity, which came out of when Rome, the Bishop of Rome, became the Pope and seized power, solidified control, and started stamping out the other Gnostic faiths, they didn't want to describe themselves as the Gnostics, but they were.
Mm-hmm.
Because the theology that grew out of the church is very similar to what the other Gnostic groups were saying. The other Gnostic groups, none of the other Gnostic groups said that they were Gnostic either. They all claimed to be the correct view. And, you know, this is, it was more of a political move more than a theological one.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay,
really more of a human thing, because the word Gnostic basically implies I know. So to break it down in its most simplest form, I know. And everybody, well, today we say, yes, where did you get the knowledge to know? Where did this come from? But everybody was running around saying, I know what Christianity is. And they started explaining what Christianity was. And we had many corrections over the centuries trying to rearrange what everybody knew, because humans will take different viewpoints on umpteen things. I mean, we all know that when you get a bunch of them together, what happens? Everybody has their own ideas. Why do they want to take someone else's ideas and say, hey, that's not a bad idea, when they all came with their own? So Gnosticism basically is a lot of people running around saying, I know. So it took us centuries and centuries to figure out who really knew something and who was making it up. So that's the mystery or the dilemma that we're in today.
Mm-hmm. Okay, with that being said, we're going to read one more last paragraph for today's program presentation on page 139, and it goes like this. The advanced Gnostic theology in the Gospel of John and the writings of Paul were a primary influence on Gnostic Christianity. For Paul and John were popular with the various Gnostic sects during Christianity's formative period, when the Roman Gnostic Church eliminated its Gnostic rivals and destroyed the literature, they felt the battle for the control of Christianity had been won, and with the threat of Gnosticism silenced, Farava, as the church believed, in the arguments and debates about Gnosticism were regulated to scholarly studies in the teachings of Irenaeus and Tertullian. However, with the discovery and translation of the Nag Hammadi texts, it becomes glaringly obvious that Christian theology had much more in common with Gnosticism than it did with Judaism, that the main tenets of Christianity were recycled Gnostic concepts and ideas. Dennis, any take on these matters?
Well, that's true, too, but it wasn't until, let's say, we have two important people who were the center of the diverse Gnosticism that existed for a long time. One is Paul, the other is John. Both became saints, and that was a highly honored position within Christianity. But yet, we had theologians that had to start stripping away what Paul put together and what John put together to get closer to what we considered the real Christianity. Now, since everybody said they know, how do you know where they get their source? If some of them said, well, I had a dream and I got this from God, were they really prophets? No way. But they believed in what they came up with and what they constructed. And it still exists today throughout the Mediterranean area, especially in Greece and other places, even in parts of Egypt, where they believe strongly in favor of St. Paul and St. John. They don't de-emphasize God, but they believe in what Paul and John said. But the Catholic Church itself changed a lot of that stuff over the centuries and started stripping away from the stuff that they put together, those two people. And today, we don't even talk about it, but it just brings up strenuous discussion on things when we should be concentrating on, let's say, the Ten Commandments. So if Paul or John had a different idea of what's in the Ten Commandments, well, they're entitled to their opinion. But we rather have all the people everywhere understand the basics of what the Ten Commandments are.
Alan, one last comment before we conclude today's program.
Well, the people who had the right view and the right idea were the rabbis, not Gnostic Christians, and certainly not writers such as John and Paul. These two, the reason their books were so popular at the time and are still much more popular today is that very point, that they had incorporated a lot of these Gnostic teachings into what they wrote.
Mm-hmm. I hear you. So yes, Dennis.
The rabbis were following a script. They weren't going off script. The script was written, and they were following it. So therefore, the rabbis were better organized than those people running around about Christianity over the centuries. So we must remember that the agnostics were running around without a script. And what can you come up with on a regular basis and pin your hope?
I hear you. I just want to mention that one of the at that time too, in the early stages of Christianity, just in my concluding statement for today. We're talking about before 300 to 400 Common Era, that the rabbis were collecting oral Torah traditions, but it came to the point where Rabbi Judah the Prince saw that if there was not going to be a process of collating and documenting these traditions, oral Torah traditions, that you would have this hodgepodge and chaotic situation, and he could not foresee the Jewish people surviving as Jewish people for the next millennia, and certainly until the coming of the Messiah. The Jewish perception of it, the theological viewpoint of it, if we did not put those writings down. So next week, bless those, hopefully we'll be joined again on, I guess it'll be the 21st of September with Dennis and Alan and Dennis. And we'll be talking about what Gnosticism gave birth to, and it went actually beyond religion, and it actually influences us today, according to Alan's assertion, how we look at today's Bible. But with that being said, we're going to conclude today's program. We're going to segue, since we are, according to the Hebrew lunar calendar year, we do believe that the whole world, not just the Jewish people, will be going under the eternal, merciful microscope or telescope or stethoscope of the Creator coming up in about 18-plus days. It's called Rosh Hashanah, the New Year. And so we're going to conclude with today's program with a book, an a cappella, a wonderful song with the only musical instrumentation of the wonderful voice of the young men of Yeshiva University, the Maccabees, talking about the Book of Good Life. This is Don Zussi Goodman, your local international cyberspace Torah activist. Just reminding everyone, you've got to be good. Why? Because the Teva Tov Lehativ, it's the nature of the good to do good, and the Creator is the source of our good. And may all this transparent way of one love, Gorlacha, one destiny, Kolon of Olos, Badachin, Umdachi, Shalom, in a peaceful and pleasant way. Take care, everyone, until next week.
everyone.